Hello and welcome to The Blockchain and Us, where pioneers and thought leaders talk about their journey in blockchain technology, crypto assets, and the token economy. And I'm your host, Manuel Staggers. If you enjoy this podcast, please give it a top rating and review on iTunes, and feel free to follow me on Twitter at Manuel Staggers. This episode is brought to you by Crypto Storage. Crypto Storage offers a proprietary solution to enable professional storage of crypto assets. The storage is secure both physically and digitally on the highest grade hardware security modules with detailed configuration possibilities for individual-based access control. To learn more, visit www.cryptostorage.ch. My guest today is Paul Meeuwissen. Paul is the head of distributed ledger technology at Swiss Re, one of the biggest reinsurance companies in the world, and acting CEO of B3i, the Blockchain Insurance Industry Initiative, which is overhauling the way insurance companies exchange data and trade risks. Paul has over 25 years of experience in advising, building, and operating multidisciplinary teams in finance, accounting, operational treasury, audit, and risk control, and he designed the first blockchain use case for retrocession insurance on Ethereum in 2016. And now, to the interview. Hello, Paul, and many thanks for making time today.
Hi, good to be here.
So our last interview was about 1 year ago when I made this blockchain documentary. And back then you had just started a blockchain initiative at Swiss Re. What is the progress of that project?
Good. It's been good. It's been a bit more than a year and a half almost, and we started at Swiss Re. And we quickly realized that, as you would expect, with shared ledgers or distributed ledgers, the true success really does not come when you do it on your own. So a shared ledger experiment quickly led us to sharing our findings with others in the industry. So an internal prototype in the fall of 2016 was shared by us with a group of about five, and we decided to form a small joint venture that became 15, and then we worked all throughout 2017 on a joint prototype. We brought in our intelligence, other companies had theirs, that led to this so-called CatXL, a natural catastrophe contract settlement platform in good prototype stage. And that was most of 2017.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How did you initially get in touch with blockchain technology?
Yeah. So at the time, I was in charge of our finance service centers in Swiss Re. I spent most of my time in India and Slovakia. And especially in India, I came across very technology-savvy people. And in one of our tech startup days, amongst different topics, I came across the topic of blockchain. This is now more than 2.5 years ago. And I started learning, and this sounded to me the best of the different things I had seen over the past 20 years. A bit of course, internet, a bit of cloud computing, a bit of good cryptography and security handling, and also this thing that I was told called smart contracts. And that interested me a lot because I started in early days in my career in financial modeling, which was trying to express financial logic into easy to understand computational logic. So essentially that is what smart contracts does. So that's what got me interested. And I then started applying it to a real internal case. And we took our internal retrocession process and applied all of these things and showed very quickly that the efficiencies that you can achieve when everyone looks at a single version of the truth, when you eliminate unnecessary reconciliations, that can really shorten dramatically the elapsed time, and you can focus much more on what is in this case a risk transfer process and insurance rather than all the data recrunching and the reconciliation.
How did you go originally about understanding the tech part of everything?
Yeah, we started with Ethereum at the time. We to went about that by also getting in some outside help. We used some consulting advice to select first which platform we would use. Fairly quickly made a selection and then focused also with outside help on doing a rapid prototype, not more than about 10 weeks. And we had a mixed team of so-called insurance subject matter experts, some contract experts, some legal experts, and some IT experts. We had to admit it is new territory for us, so we had the external coding largely done by a specialized firm, but worked shoulder to shoulder with them so that we could at least have knowledge transferring. And that helped us then also when we did step two with the consortium. We decided on a different platform. We could then even more involve also our own developers, and therefore you don't only develop a solution, but also further develop your own internal know-how. And that I think I would advise that to everyone, because it's not only the what you do, but also how you do it. And if you, and the how you do it, make sure your internal knowledge also gets built up, which prevents you also getting too much in a rabbit hole and focus only on technology. But you then have people who can only explain this, could also explain this to your business users in the house, who need to be convinced that this technology really makes their life easier.
So that was a pilot internally that you started. Mm-hmm. Was it your idea to start this within Swiss Re?
Yeah, it was. So I had one colleague in our India office who introduced me to the blockchain technology. In insurance, even in those days, claims was typically an area that people would think of. I looked at claims with the head of our claims and business management, as we call it. The reason why we didn't go for the external claims process, we would need, this is quite a critical process in an insurance company, so we would need the beneficiaries, our clients, the beneficiaries of claims payment, to be ready to engage in such experiment. And for something that's quite like vital in what we do, make sure the claims get paid on time, we quickly saw that's perhaps not what what external clients want to experiment on. So that's then therefore why we went to the internal process, where it's internal insurance as well, but it's mainly an intra-company process where you kind of settle on a net basis between each other. So companies within Swiss Re who owe each other a premium, and then you get claims in reverse. Set more of a safe zone, and we could also run things in parallel, still have the old system in place versus the new prototype. And then when I came with the idea, we put the virtual team together. So this was largely done by people doing it in addition to their normal job, and then with some outside support.
Mm-hmm. How hard was it? I mean, Swiss Re is a very traditional company. How hard was it to start something like this? I mean, back then, cryptocurrencies or blockchain technology still had maybe, you know, somewhat of a lesser reputation than it does today. It was maybe less clear what big companies could do with it. But how hard was it to convince the company to let you do this?
Yep. Well, it wasn't easy. Maybe I'll try to answer that by saying, in hindsight, what were the various mitigations that we had to say, almost like getting away with it. One was, I would admit, flying a bit under the radar, as simple as it may sound. But as I said, I and most of the other colleagues did it kind of besides their normal job. And that's maybe often life. Often entrepreneurs as well need to kind of do something that that keeps them alive, and somehow in free time do the next real thing that they really want to do. And sometimes it's basics like that, having an agreement with your boss that you have your thing organized in some way that with 80% of your time and good delegation and organization, you promise your boss that things won't fall apart. And if you have to judge for yourself whether you're in a business or in at a point in your career whether you've built things up stable and efficient enough that you can delegate. And so that was luckily the situation I was in. So a bit of flying under the radar.
How big was the team? Or initially?
Oh, initially we had about 5 internal and complemented with 5 external. Yeah, max. And not all those, and all those kind of, most of the 5 internal flew a bit under the radar, all managed to have some like 70-30 agreement with their various departments that they could kind of free up something in the order of 30%. The second is not just under the radar, it's very much on the radar, is having a strong sponsor. So we really had like C-suite level two sponsors I had from the beginning who backed us up, who wanted us to be creative with funding. So this was not some massive project. Also gave us the right subject matter experts to validate our ideas. And the last thing is probably not to create massive large projects, like succeed fast or fail fast. So this was a fairly short 10-week period, which is quite short duration compared to other large projects.
In 10 weeks, you got the pilot off the ground.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you interact with the CEO as well in that time?
Not at that time. When it was soon after when it started evolving to a more solid consortium, so we moved and kind of donated our idea into the industry. Then very much because our current CEO was himself in his very early days in the career directly involved in a prior initiative that Swiss Re was involved in called InRayon. Almost 20 years ago, Munich Re Swiss Re co-led a initiative. One could almost say it's a bit similar to B3i today, but with the e-commerce type of technology coming on board in the early 2000 years. So I had some advice from him, especially on like making sure what not to do, to make sure there's a broader adoption. It's not seen as being just dominated by two large players. It's not seen as being dominated only by reinsurers. And making sure that the benefit can be seen early on. It's often the case, I think Swiss Re has a good reputation for being a knowledge company, but has sometimes to be a bit careful that you develop a lot and you invest a lot in knowledge, which costs a lot of money. And you have to also be careful that things have a return. As else you may get in a situation, you're one of the few companies in the industry always investing in knowledge development, and the others nicely benefit from it.
And how did you make sure that wouldn't happen?
That we had, from the beginning in B3i, had a quite balanced membership between cedents, primary insurance companies, brokers, and reinsurers, especially when the market testing group also joined in the fall of 2017. Regionally also spread, although the largest participants from Europe, but we had US and Japanese members and investors from the beginning. And that we also didn't just outsource everything to an army of consultants. And nothing against consultants. We had excellent outside support. But if it takes away the ownership and engagement from the member firms, then you're really outsourcing your accountability a little bit. So those were some of the ingredients we applied well.
When you talk about it like this, you make it sound so easy. Right, we brought in these Japanese reinsurers and the other competitors even into our project here. But I mean, Swiss Re has $30 billion of premium volume. I mean, it's one of the biggest reinsurers in the world. And here you were developing a pilot on the Ethereum blockchain, which, you know, back then it was just a DAO hack just happened and all kinds of things like these. I mean, was there ever any tension between that?
Yeah, true. So on the technology choice, that's one indeed challenge. The technology is evolving. So we then moved from Ethereum, opened the spectrum again, looked at everything that was available about a year and a half ago. We chose for Hyperledger. Hyperledger Fabric had very good experience with that all through 2017, maturing our prototype to a good, say, minimum viable product. And currently, again, we're the next challenge, we were critically under the the review of our members again. As you go to operational readiness, you need a next level of operational risk management. So scalability when high volumes come, and privacy management when private and sensitive data like life policies, for example, get on your platform. Scalability and privacy was again further heightened or increased in terms of key criteria we really cannot miss. So we're now in our, again, the platform review. And we will again, we are reassessing what platform, technology platform, is the one we would go into an operational life environment with. So that is a challenge. This, it's the nature of this type of technology that a lot is still evolving. It's also a challenge to keep everyone engaged. So we currently have focused mainly on reinsurance, property and casualty. We just had to start somewhere, back to this fail fast, succeed fast, and don't create a mammoth project. But this, of course, it requires some of the members to have a longer breath. So if you are a US-focused life and health big insurance or reinsurance company, and we had some members, you have to have a long breath and a strategic view to say, okay, we bear with this consortium doing property and casualty, which has no value at us, because we know that will lay the basis, and in a good year from now, they'll get to the business segments that I am interested in. Sounds easy, isn't always. And also, we've had members who decided, okay, it's good, it's been good to learn, but we are stepping out, and we'll come back when you are in the lines of business that are of direct interest to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just about to ask. I mean, I'm sure that wasn't smooth sailing all the time. I mean, were there any challenges where maybe you thought, oh, I'm not quite sure that's ever, you know, going to happen, or maybe we really have to think this through again from a different angle?
One is also getting the right expertise. So I said before, you need like the technical expertise, coding, etc., coders, architects, blockchain technology specialists. But also in this a bit specialized industry, also those that really live and breathe insurance. So that can talk about these contracts, the rules, the terms, the conditions, exclusions, all of that. So that latter category, the so-called subject matter experts, they don't like grow on trees. It's a bit of a special business. Insurance, especially reinsurance, is often known like, you know, that you're only taken serious when you've done it for 10, 15 or 20 years. A bit overstated, perhaps, but the point is you do need a couple of these veterans in that can bring that subject matter expertise. And of course, they're always scarce and it's not easy to just get them. But that was often quite challenging. One of the solutions was to go into short so-called sprints, so short development cycles. So you could go to the C-suite and say, okay, we just need a couple of your specialists for this distinct short period for their functional input. So because we really want to create a product that is as it should be. We don't want to do something in isolation in some lab and you'll tell us that we are just out of touch with the reality. But you need to keep that focus. So that subject, getting those subject matters in, we've also introduced rotations and even secondments. And secondments would also now, as we have evolved, mean that we reimburse for that, right? And because we've evolved to a process, we have just now incorporated B3i in the independent company, and that's capitalized. And if as an independent company, we're actually a limited company held by shares, so why would anyone give to a commercially acting company anything for free? And that's what we also do now. Whilst as we are capitalized, we kind of ask our customer base, we want you future customers to engage and work with us. And any company who engages, not just a couple hours, but a couple weeks or perhaps months, some of its customer base needs to think about a fair compensation for that. And that's also what we do. We formalize that in secondment contracts. So for some of these, that also allows them to say after some months, oh, this is something that I really want to do more longer term, and it can become a career opportunity.
So you really had to approach this whole project like a startup, almost.
Absolutely. We also just moved to a separate office. we did a selection of different locations from US to Europe, then different places to Europe, and it came down to a short list of three. We landed in Switzerland, Zurich, strong reinsurance market, well reputable regulator, good talent base, not just insurance, but also large tech players, Google and the likes. Google has its second largest European operation outside California, second largest global operation. Starts to develop the scene here, starts to develop quite some blockchain expertise as well, both in Zug and in Zurich. So, yeah, those were some of the arguments that led us to come and settle here. We literally a month ago also went into our own office. It's an interesting name, and that location is called Trust Square. A group of entrepreneurs, or one entrepreneur in particular, took the initiative to just organize one innovation center. We are in there, surrounded by only other nothing but blockchain startups.
But I mean, has that ever happened before, that, you know, a reinsurance company with that kind of, you know, volume has been working neck to neck with startups?
Let's take a quick break for a message from our sponsors. Crypto Storage is part of the Crypto Finance Group, providing services for professional financial intermediaries and therefore bridging the gap between traditional markets and blockchain technology. The storage solution offered by Crypto Storage raises market standards by introducing a new security paradigm, which features two layers of dedicated and redundant hardware devices. This setup allows for a dedicated, independent, and highly flexible multi-signature framework. All transactions can be independently reviewed and approved on a dedicated tamper-proof hardware. The hardware security module, the tamper-proof signing devices, and the tailored software solution are all developed by leading Swiss providers with vast experience in finance and IT security. To learn more, visit www.cryptostorage.ch.
Has that ever happened before, that, you know, a reinsurance company with that kind of, you know, volume has been working neck to neck with startups?
Perhaps, not that I know of.
In your career, it must be a first.
For me, it's a first. So, in as we were trying in this joint venture period, we were in Munich. There's also and many cities have these startup places. Now we were in a place called Werk Eins. And there, Allianz and Deloitte and a few others. It's one of these innovation places where different large companies have their innovation floor to try something out. This has that, plus the fact that we are, as a startup also, we are ourselves a combination of the different participating insurance companies, and we want to create something that's of value for the entire market. That's surely unique. Mm-hmm.
How do you fund the B3I?
So it's in Switzerland or Germany, the form is called AG, which stands for equivalent to a limited company held by shares. So it is it has currently 13 equal shareholders who have funded it sufficiently with, I would say, seed capital. So we just started, and that brings us through most of the current year. But we have laid out, we have a product roadmap for the next 2.5 years. You don't build a platform for the entire industry or lines of business in less time than that. And therefore, we have a funding proposal, a so-called information memorandum, to all interested parties in the insurance industry. And we are going now to our funding process, so that besides the seed capital, which gets us out of the starting blocks, we have the full funding to take us through the next further 2 years of development. So that there will be a capital increase, and that's what we're working on from now till summer of this year.
Mm-hmm. Did you also ever consider new ways to raise capital, such as maybe a pre-sale or a token sale?
That's a good point. We did not, and I know there's others who are doing that in interesting ways. I think our colleagues eat the risk, for example. I think that's a quite innovative, interesting idea. We have not at this point. that would perhaps have been too much in one go to absorb in terms of innovation, the product itself, and then the way you fund it as well for our industry. But I could see over time some potential use of tokens. So the funding will do in a fairly classical way. I think as we evolve, there may be use of tokens, especially in the way this whole settlements happen of, you know, you pay me premium, then I pay you claims. And then there's, why wouldn't we, especially in a business to business, have certain netting? And why would that always have to be a normal fiat currency? There, that's an interesting concept, I think, the use of service or utility tokens or any type of tokens that could be of use in basically settling reinsurance indemnities or insurance.
Is this something you're piloting as well?
No, honestly, we are not yet. This is, as we will look at the actual whole payments engine, which currently we are planning to do with normal fiat currency, but it's on the longer term roadmap, something at some point we just should relook at some later point. That's more like further crystal ball thinking, honestly. I was just giving that as an example because these are suggestions in our wider user group that we've been given to just consider over the longer term.
Do you see further use of blockchain technology in the insurance business?
Interestingly, and I think it's interesting to see how it comes directly from the end insurer. So as an example, you see these mobility platforms, the like of Uber or the Grab, their Asia equivalent data, etc. One US company recently acquired 2.5 million motor policies by making a deal with Grab. So you get very quickly access to a large number of motor policies. They're all digital already, the Uber drivers or Grab. And companies are starting to realize, okay, we can be much more innovative of how we deal with all those data. The old way, we would have taken these 2 million pieces of paper or data files and loaded them in some proprietary system, etc. This is as a platform provider, we can deliver a great service to bring such new business models quickly up to market. On the life and health side, for example, I recently heard that the United States, of all places, does not have one register of death certificates, which might sound a bit morbid, but it's something that's quite problematic for life insurances in the US, and we hear that. So we hear people talking about, I think, good things. As such, I would say personally, my motivation is not so much to promote that this technology or blockchain is the holy grail. But if we can make people's lives better and makes people, which it is, if it's already in the circumstances that people are when sad things happen in life, it's unnecessary that we should have administrative complications around proving something like a death, which is practically what you're doing. It's better proving a birth. Well, that even is also problematic if you see how many countries don't have birth certificates. And then we can go on, countries that cannot even have home ownership proof in South America or India. So those are real life problems. And that, I think, is really the even more exciting. And that is what people should think first of. And what I see, indeed, this is leading people to come with very innovative insurance solutions, because if birth, death, ownership, loss of a crop through drought, those are real life things, especially in emerging markets, that people suffer by. And all of these things rely on trustworthy data to prove the event that has happened. And increasingly, new technologies, so-called Internet of Things, etc., can help to give an accurate, immutable source of those events, when and what happened, and display that or secure that on one common network. And that's a good way of people. That's what insurance should think of. You know, makes people live without with less sorrow, and deal with insurance in the way that it really should focus on, not the administrative distractions.
In general, do you think the insurance industry is quite open to technology?
Yes and no. The no is that it's a fairly long tail industry. So as you hear about these systems having been built X years ago, and that there's sometimes internally in the big houses, people who are cling too much to their system that they have built and then their maybe position is tied to. But the yes is from a refreshing new thinking with some of the examples that I was saying. If the market, if the client, especially the new generation of client, if the high growth markets in countries that I mentioned makes it so clear to you that even the blind and the deaf will get it, that yes becomes much so overwhelming that you can't hide yourself behind your 20-year-old COBOL system that you want to amortize for another 5 years. Then these arguments quickly go away.
Mm-hmm. What have you learned personally since you started with blockchain technology in your work?
I will perhaps mention one that's a bit perhaps counterintuitive. It may surprise some people that although we are talking about technology, the key success factor here is by far not technology most of all, it's the people. Now, this sounds like maybe a bit fluffy, so to be more specific. It's amazing how, although we are so enabled these days by technology, we can work remotely and we would think people's life is more on the smartphone than in real life. To make projects like this happen, the real teams that succeed and distinguish itself from the others is those that succeed to have people really work together. Why is it so important here? We are in a consortium, also very international, multicultural, people with different interests from a cultural background, from the companies they come from. And it tends to be underestimated how the differentiating factor between two teams, one failing, one succeeding, is the team that has the silver bullet, the magic sauce, to make people tick together, whether they come from China, Switzerland, US, and whatever industry, whether they claim to know it all in insurance, where the others will say they claim to know all the technology. Well, as often the truth is somewhere in the middle. And that good team collaboration, I think, will really be the final success factor.
How do you go about enabling that collaboration?
In part, taking people out of their regular routine, so hence the incorporation of a separate company. Having a big picture on the one side, but at the same time disciplined enough to have near-term goals and an ongoing monitoring back with in our case, both our shareholders, our investors, and the future users to avoid landing in the rabbit hole.
Mm-hmm. Was there a skill gap too?
In the beginning, a bit on the technology. As we evolved more on making sure we have sufficient intake from the industry specialists, the so-called subject matter experts, as it takes a special way to convince an actuary or a risk specialist to be engaged in this. I think it requires people who are sufficiently forward thinking to say, well, 20 years of actuarial modeling with whatever type of model you have and statistics behind it, it's easy to say, yep, that what has worked the past 20 years, why wouldn't that work the next 20? It takes a bit of special convincing so that these people, most of those also understand within the very rich data world that we live today, we need to go more and more to risk mitigation and prevention rather than just what classical statistics is. You look at ex post, you look at things that happened in the past, you have some model of extrapolation to predict the future. Well, that's a bit too reactive. And I think that the people that get that really jump on this train. Mm-hmm.
How long overall have you been in the insurance industry?
20 some years. So it's been 18 years actually in the industry, but the, just a couple of years before that in financial advisory, I was primarily focusing on insurance already. So some 20 plus years.
Has your interest maybe in this industry, has it maybe changed since the blockchain came about?
I think it has brought me a bit closer back to the actual risk pools and then the underlying risks to because as a reinsurer or commercial insurers, you can become a bit far away from things that really happen on the front. I think that's what data does. It goes through all the steps of intermediaries much quicker. Hence some of the examples I was giving before of both the life and non-life industry. So that was quite a good experience to come back closer to these like risk pools, as we call them, and also very interactive engagement with our clients, which, given that I've mainly been on the finance and risk management side, has been a bit different. So that client experience has been very enriching.
Mm-hmm. As an entrepreneur, or maybe as a leader of this startup that you started within Swiss Re B3i, do you have any role models?
That's a good question. I think role models also in the near, in our firm, I've seen people come from very skeptical to absolute enthusiasts. And I think that's also a great quality. So I currently have one of my best sponsors now is our CFO, our reinsurance CFO, challenged me in the beginning, was very good, two years ago, very bright and pointed questions, and that forced me to stay on my feet. But as he saw that we could, we acted on these things and the thing kept growing, he then turned into our biggest enthusiast. I think that's a good quality, that you can be very strong about your opinion, but then you can also evolve if you see people are really addressing challenges. In the industry, there is, or in the broader in innovation, there's a lot. In general, I just have a lot of role model or a lot of admiration for people who can really deliver or prove what it is to be an entrepreneur. I think there's a lot of, I would call, entrepreneurial tourism these days. People like to go to conferences, like to go to Silicon Valley, but and you take some risk like what I do to kind of do intrapreneurship within a large company. But I often remind myself and colleagues that people who live on their own personal savings for 2 years and to then hope that after 2 years something will come out, those are probably the real entrepreneurs. So those are role models as well for me.
Okay, well, that's what I did in the last 2 years.
Congratulations.
In general, what would you like people to understand better about blockchain technology?
That it's not this mysterious thing only for dubious transactions. I think that's a big misconception. It sometimes I often remind people that if you look at money funding for very criminal activity, if you look at the hard data, actually the one key currency is the greenback. That this is what these people use. They don't need cryptocurrency. It's just that's one just misconception. Then there are some misconceptions around the energy uses. Of course, the actual mining of cryptocurrency is an issue. That's not relevant to the way we use the core blockchain technology. And lastly, maybe just this fallacy that it's making things even more intransparent or less secure, perhaps inspired by the volatility recently of the cryptocurrencies. Well, actually, what we want to use is what we want to bring is by use of this technology, there is rather more transparency. So if you look at an insurance contract, pages and pages, people sign something, but then don't really look at it anymore or don't really understand what the terms and conditions are. Smart contract should do the opposite, should make it rather more transparent.
Was there anything I forgot to ask?
Well, maybe you should ask where we'll be in 3 years, but we can revisit that. I think in 3 years, definitely, we should be way out of the experimentation. We should be not too much discussing technology anymore. We should see really that insurance has become more affordable and accessible for like entire communities who thus far could not even have dreamt of having proper access to affordable insurance. So that's maybe the question we should ask, we should discuss again in a couple of years from now. Hope to have good answers then.
Thanks a lot, Paul, for taking time.
You're welcome.
Thanks so much for joining us today. More info on our guests and our sponsors is in the show notes of this episode and on the podcast website, theblockchainandus.com. To help people find this podcast, it's important that you download, subscribe, and give it a top rating and review on iTunes or on the podcast platform of your choice. I'm Manuel Staggers, and I thank you very much for listening.